so then you just look like a floating guy with a gigantic beard.
Yes.
All right.
Like a guru or something.
A beard guru.
You could like disguise your beard inside your colostomy bag. It's like, oh, it's your colostomy bag.
It's
like,
your what beard. Now?
Colostomy bag. Colostomy bag.
Say it again.
Colostomy.
Colostomy bag.
Oh, that's what he's trying to say.
I'm sure Marx had sodomy in the word.
That's how it's spelled.
Your colostomy's not?
Yes, it is.
You're missing several vowels, but.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Free to Play episode 23, Colostomy Bag Edition. It's March 11th, 2013. I am Brian Valita. I am joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Okay, here's my great intro joke. I don't know if that made it past the intro, but here we go. Here's my great intro joke, because last time Brian stole my intro joke. So, Brian, if you could introduce me again. Thank you.
All right. I am Brian Valita, and I am joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Hello, I'm Mark Bradshaw.
And you see, the point of that joke was I've been fixed by Electronic Arts and it's to be slower, like they fixed SimCity.
Did I do that last week?
Not last week, but week before last. If those kept keeping track with free-to-play continuity.
Imran Khan.
That was the most like overprepared, overwrought intro that we've ever had.
What would you score it?
Okay, today I'm thinking maybe like 7 out of 10, but okay. Tomorrow could be lower.
After you edit it.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know how I'm gonna feel tomorrow. We'll see.
And Matt Pierce.
Hey, semi-serious question: does this mean EA gets to take back its benchmark bonuses?
No, it doesn't, because game rankings or Metacritic, that original game scores is still there, the 9.5.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. So yes. even though Polygon is like, oh, fuck you, your game was awful, now we're going to give you a 4.0, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, yep. It's kind of scummy. And if you want to be conspiratorial minded about it, you're thinking maybe like Polygon was paid to do that because they knew what would happen. And like the developers still get their bonuses.
Nah, this is right up their alley in terms of like pretentious dick moves.
Right? It is a pretentious.
Yeah, let's jump right into this and kind of, I guess, explain some of the roundabouts
for anyone living under a rock.
For anyone living under a rock, or just has kind of just tuned out the SimCity stuff,
or who gets, or if you're through SimCity.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if your internet's as bad as good as SimCity, then.
Or honestly, if you actually do have a life and haven't actually been paying attention to review scores for PC games that you probably weren't interested in playing in the first place.
But if that's true, then you're not listening to this.
That's a good point, yeah. So who are you and why are you here?
So SimCity launched last week, and kind of to a plethora of problems.
Plethora.
Why can't I say plethora? I want to say plethora, all right? If Mark gets to say casotomy.
I'm not sure I can say that anymore, but go ahead.
If Mark gets to say casotomy, then I get to say plethora. All right, I'll say plethora. Anyways, it launched with a whole bunch of fucking problems.
A cornucopia of problems.
And mostly involving people just not being able to play the fucking game.
It's a bit of an issue. Apparently, during the long and... apparently extensive beta process, Maxis never thought maybe more than 3 people would want to connect to our game at the same time. And it turns out they didn't buy enough servers.
So, I imagine it's not a they didn't expect it sort of thing, as they didn't really care.
Yeah, this was something that people called last year when this was first announced. Well, and I mean, it's going to be just as bad as Diablo 3 was.
Yeah, and they simply came out and said, oh, we learned lessons from Diablo 3. But I think the lesson they learned is servers are fucking expensive.
And also, you know, they already have your money, so go to hell. Yeah. Really, go to hell. Screw
well,
you.
Yeah, well, okay, so on top of the fact that there were just massive server issues, just, you know, people not being able to play the game, there was a wait time, you know, apparently some people lost their cities or something just because of some connection problem.
Well, the saves are saved on the online server.
Now you gloss over something right there when you said that. You talk about a wait line. You're talking about a queue for a single player game.
Well, and then of course there is some multiplayer / social aspects to it.
Yep.
But and I've seen a lot of people say that if they had marketed this as SimCity Online, then there wouldn't have been such a hullabaloo.
Also, they would have sold as third as many copies.
Yeah, right. But the fact that it was marketed as SimCity, which traditionally has always been a single-player game, and yes, there are some social aspects. I don't know. I don't think anyone had really expected it. But anyway, so on top of all this, completely shit server problems that they were just totally unprepared for, there was something that somebody, you might have seen it, was posting this chat log where they were talking with, you know, EA Origins kind of customer support about wanting a refund for SimCity, because at some point EA or Maxis had, you know, posted something saying, you know, hey, we're sorry about this. If you want a refund, please get in touch with our customer service. And basically the chat representative was saying, actually, we can, you know, completely ban you or remove, you know, I forget what the actual phrasing was. I'm going to have to actually find it.
But, they said if you get a refund, like if you went to Amazon and said, I demand my money back for this, and which Amazon would totally do because Amazon actually cares about stuff like this, EA would basically ban you from the servers forever, and you couldn't get back.
So what servers? From the SimCity servers or Origin?
Yeah, your Origin account.
So all of your Origin games.
Yeah.
Yes.
For getting a refund.
So I'm looking at this, let's see... right, here we go. That is understandable, but I must inform you that if you choose to dispute it, it being, you know, calling, the person wanted to call their bank and have the refund done that way. And the EA rep was saying, that is understandable, but I must inform you that if you choose to dispute it, your account will be banned.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Despite sending out a press release saying that they would offer refunds.
Also, I'm not sure that's policy. I'm sure it's just, you know, like, I'm sure chargebacks in general are policy, but I think with SimCity, they should not have left customer service up to their own devices.
Right. Agreed.
Because they're clearly Indians.
Well, and
don't know what they're talking about.
And speaking of Amazon, Amazon actually pulled SimCity, I guess just the physical version? Or just the downloadable version.
EA went to the partners and said, please stop selling this game.
Right, that was after, I think. I think Amazon had removed
this game. Stop selling it.
Well, they asked people to stop advertising it, but I think Amazon pulled the digital download version.
Yeah, I think they did that even beforehand.
Yeah, they did that definitely before EA came.
Well, so and then on top of that, in order to attempt to alleviate some of the server problems, they started removing features from the game.
Yep.
They removed cheetah mode, which is basically just speeding up the game. So, you know, instead of waiting for, you know, whatever the in-game speed runs at for things to develop. And, you know, let's say you finish building your city and you want to see how it prospers, then you can turn on cheetah mode to basically just speed the game up. And they removed that.
Well, also, cheetah mode is like the tolerable mode in this game, because anything less than that is terrible, by all accounts. I don't know. I have no intention of playing this game, so maybe no one shouldn't speak about it. But yeah, apparently cheetah mode is the only one that actually works.
Well, I'm sure you can. I mean, like I'm not a speed demon. I probably just take my time and go at my own pace. But once I finish something, if I wanted to wait for something to happen, yeah, I want to speed it up.
Yeah, but, I get the impression that SimCity is a lot like. It sounds like what you do most of the time is you make a bunch of decisions and wait to see how they pan out, and then make some more decisions. So cheetah mode. It's the only way to do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Otherwise, you're just sitting there watching the paint dry.
And I want to say they removed some other feature as well. Maybe like the ability to build roads. I don't know.
the ability to log in and play a single player game.
Yeah, that too. It was just a whole bunch of shitty decisions and just shitty things that happened. And it's all really unfortunate just because I think there's a good game underneath that.
Yeah, so this is a really good object lesson for everyone who says, well, everyone's always on the internet. That's why we can have games that require you to be online. Right. It's okay to have a game that requires you to have an internet connection, because that's not weird. But having a game that requires you to connect to a specific server, you damn well better have enough servers to handle the load.
Right.
And apparently this is like Microsoft's solution. What we've been hearing is their solution for online, game stuff.
The difference, though, is that Xbox Live has enough connections to manage that.
I don't know. It's happened enough times that I've wanted to do something on Xbox Live and could not because it was down. Or just take Sony, for example. If you owned one of the, at that time, I think it was only one or two games that required you to sign into PSN to play, like I think Final Fight
God, I can't remember the name of the remake. But Final Fight was
awful. Final Fight scum.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
It was Streetwise, wasn't it?
No, I'm thinking of the HD remake of the arcade game.
Oh, I know. Okay, I don't.
Yeah, it required you to sign into PSN, which, as far as I know, maybe prevents you from playing it if PSN is down. But either way, they're going the next logical step with that. And if PSN were down again, you couldn't play that.
I don't know if Xbox Live Arcade is the same way, but I remember back the last time my internet was out when I was moving the last time. Like, all of my arcade stuff, say my hard drive, the stuff I paid money for, I couldn't play because it couldn't connect to the servers to authenticate what right. I was doing.
Well, and I think we talked about this a bit last week with, like, Steam and offline mode. But, man, like, I don't know, just, like, make it a quick check to say, okay, this person has a real copy, now they don't need to, you know, sit on a server.
And not only that, just if it fails the check, like because it fails to make a connection at all, let it fail 3 or 4 times before you completely invalidate their copy of the game.
Yeah.
Or if it passes the first time. I mean, let's assume that it works perfectly well, like the online code stuff. Let's say that their codes work perfectly well, because we should assume that works perfectly well instead of the servers working perfectly well. If the codes work perfectly well and it validates the first time you hook in, that should be all you need. The flag or whatever should be turned off and you should be locked.
Well, I can understand them wanting to do this more than once. That way they could, on the fly, add some countermeasures to piracy.
I can understand that, but at the same point, I would like, of course they're not going to do this. I'd like them to err on the side of the consumer. Like, their verification that you're actually own the thing is not as stringent as, like, the policy itself.
Well how about, you know, it just gets verified once, and if it's been verified once, then, you know, if you try to connect after that and let's say you can't connect to the server, just let the person play online or offline. Maybe they don't get updates. I don't know, but it's just so consumer unfriendly.
What happens in 3 years? When EA no longer feels like keeping SimCity servers up and running.
Oh, you buy SimCity 6.
Yeah, the new one comes out.
Same thing they do for Madden or FIFA or anything else. Well,
what I didn't realize, I saw Gabe from Penny Arcade send a tweet out earlier today that I guess he had made a SimCity server. I assume that just means it's like, you know, Left 4 Dead, where, you know, you can just make one using their servers. But I didn't realize you could do something like that.
I think he may have been talking about, like, maybe making a region and, like, leaving people inside the region.
And people can connect to it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you can connect, then apparently it's fine, aside from the point where, like, if you ever lose connection at all, ever, it also then dumps you out.
Yeah. But so, I mean, it's just a really unfortunate situation, especially for, you know, I don't know, my heart really went out to the developers of the game, to Maxis. Just to kind of have this one barrier of entry lumped on top of it from the publisher.
We went into this, I think, last week. Is EA the enemy? And I think it's just evidence that EA is, like, if they're the ones who actually forced this upon Maxis and said, look, we need you guys to be online. We need to cut the size of the cities, like, basically in half to promote people playing online and cooperative play. And then this is the outcome, then... Yeah, they're kind of evil at this point. They are actually kind of our enemy, and, like, the evidence just keeps mounting toward that.
Okay, so, but this isn't where it gets the worst, I think. So on top of all the actual SimCity stuff, we have the Polygon debacle.
The
Polygon review score debacle, which it opened up on the 4th of March, before the game even launched.
Right.
It was actually officially out. They put up a review with a score of 9.4, and we mentioned 9.5,
yeah.
and mentioned it last week about the whole seamless when it is working thing.
That's not a quote that's going to bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, the thing is that the reason that quote's in there is because it didn't work when they reviewed it. I don't know why they assumed that it would after launch.
Yeah.
Because they told them it would. They have no reason to disbelieve that. I'm relying on sarcasm too much.
And also, we have to get this review score out before everyone else. So here's the 9.5.
And so the next day, on March 5th, they updated the review with an 8. So they dropped it 1.5 points. I don't know why exactly they dropped the point. I think just because of the launch woes.
Just because,
you know,
of the launch
issues. They cited people suffering from disconnections while in-game, which results in lost progress.
Well, it's important to note that the 9 and the 8.5, they were essentially reviewing the same game just with the server connections. It wasn't until the next stop that EA started removing features from the game entirely.
Yeah. So then 2 days later, on March 7th, they dropped the score in half. They dropped it from an 8 to a 4. So in the course of 3 days, it went from a 9.5 out of 10 to a 4 out of 10.
Which, if their argument is the game is unplayable and completely shit at that point, okay, I agree. It's just weird that we started off with near flawless at the start of this, with sitting on EA, basically sitting on top of EA server farms in the ideal conditions, and you get a 9.5, and then the harsh reality of light comes alive, and you get to a 4. It just seems really weird that you can drop that quickly that far. I understand they cut like features out of it, and that's their justification. They say it's not the same game.
Yeah.
But at the same point, how can cutting the speed turn a game from nearly flawless into what in the review score world is basically a travesty.
Dog
like
shit.
You don't get lower than 7 without the game being a war crime. And this is a 4, for fuck's sake.
One of the other things that they cited for the score drop was that EA disabled the leaderboards for SimCity, which, first off, is SimCity leaderboards is kind of weird, but I guess it's kind of, you see your friends, what their populations are, how their cities are doing, which is probably kind of neat to see. But that's not like a landmark feature as far as needing it to play the game.
No, that's strictly, I mean, if you take a look at the other SimCities, was there even a score? It's like you get money, sure, but I guess population.
Right, it wasn't like at the end when, I don't know, when your city just burned to the ground, or if they had a running. No, but I assume it's just like your gross domestic income or whatever, gross domestic product and stuff like that for your city/town. I
mean, the big point here is that floating review scores are dumb.
Right. Well, Polygon, even in the SimCity thing, they link to their review policy, and it opens up with the line, "The era of the game as a static product is essentially over." Which is true, but
the problem is that's our double-sided sword, because you can lower game scores, but if it starts working again, do they raise it?
Yeah, and I mean, that goes on to so many other topics that they don't want to touch and we don't want them to touch. Like, do they have to start negating points for every FPS because the people you play online are a bunch of racist assholes? I mean, does that make the game any worse? It certainly makes the online experience worse.
Do you have to raise a game's score because of a patch?
Do you raise a game like Fallout 3 when like a bunch of DLC drops for it at the end of the year? Do you raise the score a couple points because all this new content is there?
Or do you drop it because the DLC is shit?
The exact opposite of this situation. Games that are released buggy, do they get points taken off because they're buggy? And do you give those points back if there's a patch that fixes it?
Which, these guys are saying... Yeah, hang on a second. Brooklyn, everybody.
It's the review police.
It's the review police. We're about to run. But they're saying that the days of the fixed review scores are essentially over. Number one, that's kind of bullshit, because MMOs have existed for a while, and MMOs are never the same from day to day to day.
Every MMO review, you know off the bat, that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have to take this... We've moved into new crazy territory that... Every review could be total bullshit. We have no idea, because it doesn't necessarily represent even what happens when you go buy the game on the first day.
And it's only a floating review score because of the completely arbitrary decision to make this thing always online. If it would release like without needing server support, they would release at 9.5. It would have stayed a 9.5 forever.
Not that the game doesn't deserve it, but I get the feeling that a lot of places are beating up on SimCity just for cred.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. That seemed
it's
like
a bandwagon.
And for review score, for the shock value. And that really seemed like what the original review score from Polygon was to begin with, because they had to get that review score out before anybody else, and they had to give it such a high score. And then it came back to the bottom of the ass when I realized, oh, wait, this perfect condition is not actually sustainable at all. Yeah.
I wonder, as I'm sure they have, but I wonder if there are any very vocal people who have gone after Polygon saying, I bought this game based on your score.
They should. But
you can't really buy the games based on score anymore because the reviews don't come out in time for you to really place a pre-order.
Well,
this one did.
Yeah.
When, It may have come out before launch, but usually they close pre-orders a week before, I think.
Well, not for Origin, I don't think.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh, we forgot to mention the, I guess people have called it astroturfing on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, they've been catching, like, EA shills on Facebook and on NeoGAF.
Right, so if anyone who runs, like, a page or a group on Facebook, you know, you can post as that, you know, as that page, like, so I can make a post on Nitrobeard page as Nitrobeard, or because I'm an admin, I can, you know, post as myself. I can post as either or. You just have to flip a little switch.
Right.
And so after posting a thing on a, you know, on the EA, I want to say it was like EA Europe or EA Australia or something, page about SimCity and kind of the servers and stuff. The person forgot to flip the switch and posted as you know, SimCity, you know, EU or whatever, saying, great game, worth every penny.
Well, of course he's going to say that.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of guys caught on gaff that have been a little too enthusiastic about defending SimCity, and then they don't have very... They're not masters of disguises.
Right. Yeah.
Like, one dude was named Glassbox, which is the name of the engine for SimCity.
Brilliant.
Jesus. God. Name yourself after your dog. Or, like, the first object you see. Like, you just look around your room. My name's CoffeeBug1985.
Not a marketer.
But they were talking about just the people buying the game. I'd also argue that people who were pre-ordering the game were people who weren't going to look at the review score to begin with. I mean, if you're already in that mindset, then there's no review score which can tell you otherwise.
I don't know. If you're loading up Polygon 6 hours before the review, or before the game releases, and you see 9.5, amazing game, you should buy it, it's very easy to just open Origin right there and click
it is
preload. Right.
And the messed up thing about that is that Polygon didn't say anything to those people. I imagine there are a lot of people who are out there in the exact situation you're talking about, who saw that 9.5 and said, oh, this is great, we're going to buy that. And then when you press them on this issue, because I actually did that, I say, do you guys have anything to say to these people who bought the game? And said, yes, it's in a review score. So you go look at the review score, and the review score says, then this is back when it was pushed back to 8.5. It says, It says, approach with caution. So the people already spent $60 because of your flawless review score should now approach with caution. How does that work?
Well, I'm sure there were other sites that, you know, that rated it highly, and plenty of people were talking about it highly. I mean, I think many people kind of expected there to be, you know, server going on. I just don't think they expected it to this degree. And I mean, there's no way that Polygon can really just make it known to those people. I mean, they can't just, you know, they obviously don't have a log, and they have no way of contacting these people specifically.
But anyway, see, okay, in this situation, the only thing they really could have done is wait till it actually launched before hitting submit on that review.
Right.
And
no, you're
understand why they didn't do that. It's they're a business. They're not an altruistic thing that's designed to help people decide what game to buy.
No, you're,
even though that's a service they provide, it's not one that they do without money.
Which at that point, what is the point of the review to begin with? Yeah. I understand, like, the reviews are not there for us because we already know. We know from forums. We know from speaking to other people. We're not going to go by review scores. Like, Revengeance, you could have gave Metal Gear Solid Revengeance like a 4. I would have bought it anyway. I don't care. I know I'm going to enjoy that game. I'm sure there are other people in that same situation probably for SimCity. But there are people who are going to look at their review score. That's the only number they have. And going to game rankings or Metacritic is the only option they have because they're not tied in like us.
Well, I think...
When I ask, like, what should they have done, they could have, like, addressed those people directly and said, listen, we apologize for this. We jumped the gun on this. Clearly, the situation we were in was unsustainable. It was not a real-world situation. Our bad. They didn't do that.
So, well, the mistake they made was not just putting a line in the review saying, this is what happened on our press servers. We don't know if it's going to work, but... I don't think EA would have been happy if they made that statement.
Well, I think...
Well, that's kind of part of the problem, that they're worried about whether EA will be happy about what they say.
Yeah.
And that's...
And whether that then, you know, if they weren't happy, then EA might not, you know, give them advanced copies or invite them.
Well, EA is not going to do anything about it, but EA is not going to give them, like, exclusive developer interviews or exclusive hands-on playtime.
Right.
At E3.
Yeah, it seems like all the stuff that Polygon has resulted in changing and the way video games are reported on isn't the one thing we all hate, and that's this really close link between publishers and games, the press that's essentially a payola scheme.
Yeah.
Well, I want to revisit Imran's point about waiting to put out the review. Yeah, I mean, they were obviously very, very anxious to get this review out. You know, they want to have the first say out there that kind of gets big mention, even though they're already a big site and people are going to go there no matter when they put the review out. You know, they have a lot of big names and whatnot. And they're a popular site. There are plenty of games that have online components or that rely on online components that launch and have no problems. But for a game release as highly anticipated and as kind of popular and as loved and kind of as, you know, this reboot of SimCity, I think they definitely should have waited. Or like you said, at least put in a line saying this is our experience on the... I think that would have been the smart move. And it was just... it's just kind of surprising that they didn't do anything like that.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Because I think we're going to have to get used to this idea before it goes away.
Chris Kohler brought up a point. I don't agree with it, but I'm kind of seeing the point of it. He said that reviews, maybe they need to be treated like restaurant reviews, where like after a while, if like something gets reviewed poorly, you go back and you give it another chance. The problem is with restaurant reviews is a restaurant will stay around for months or years. And it makes sense that you'll go back a couple years later and see, like, hey, maybe they have a new chef, maybe they have a new management, maybe they've improved. A game typically has 2 weeks, and then Walmart or Best Buy will move it off their shelves. So you can't go back and revisit that.
Well, you can definitely revisit your opinion of the experience.
Sure.
I mean, it's not going to change the sales numbers in any way, but... especially in situations like this, where there was some sort of technical problem with the launch of the game, you can go back and discuss whether or not that's been corrected. But I do like the idea of revisiting things later to see if they hold up over time or if they're kind of a flash in the pan experience. But yeah, it just doesn't work in a situation where you're supposed to have canonical review scores.
Right, and especially when your industry is basically run by a company like Metacritic or Game Rankings, you know. So at some point, the industry decided it was cool for like this unpaid company to just sit there and basically decide who was getting what bonuses where, and they have no accountability or anything, and it's completely arbitrary.
Yeah, and whatever they say goes. Who gets to decide what counts as a review score for the average?
Metacritic?
Yeah.
Metacritic. That's it.
That's it. There's absolutely no real justification for why one review counts and another doesn't.
Yeah,
I think it's like 4,000 monthly visitors or something. I know I tried to get... Back when we gave scores way back when, which was like a purely incidental thing, I looked into whether or not we could put it on there, and we weren't giving 4,000 at the time, so...
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, they have a timeline of the score. Like, it's not just a single score that's updated. But for fuck's sake, it's a timeline over 3 days where it drops more than half.
Yeah.
That's some fucking oversight.
See, the thing is, they should start judging stuff by user reviews, because those guys are crazy, but they're usually crazy for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, like, I relayed the story about, you know, some friends that were talking about getting, of mine that were talking about getting SimCity, and my brother cited, you know, oh, watch out, you know, you might not want to buy it right away. There, you know, some guy who's a longtime fan of the SimCity series, you know, saying it's not that great. And so it's, and I've mentioned this before, my policy is usually never to listen to anyone else. To kind of find out for yourself, but
well, you know, the weird
there
thing
are no
about,
demos anymore.
The weird thing about us, like the hardcore crowd with review scores, to us, a review score is a validation of our opinion. If we don't agree with a review score, we're going to say, ah, you're crap. That game was better than that, or that game was worse than that. And it's rare that we actually see a review score we agree with. So, but everybody else actually uses them to buy stuff with. It's only us that sits there and uses them as a way to like start arguments or to validate our own point of view.
Yeah. Well, I also want to point out Rock Paper Shotgun's coverage of the SimCity launch, reminiscing about the good old days where you could just play SimCity 2000 wherever you wanted, you know, on your laptop, on your PC, anytime, anywhere. And it kind of makes sense. Like if you're somebody who's kind of traveling a lot, and you just have a laptop and you want to build your city, and you can't do that.
Well, you still can. You can play other games.
Yeah. That actually does bring up a really interesting question. What happens to people who like to travel and use their laptop to play games?
Well, they're fucked.
In this new future, they can't play video games.
They have to buy expensive hotel Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Or they have to... Does that game work through 3G? Is there like a... Maybe 4G, there wouldn't be that much limiting.
They claim that they work on an airplane.
They claim that there are like some computations and stuff going on in the game that's calculated on the servers. So I honestly have no idea.
But the airplane hypothetical has never been like a real thing that a lot of people do.
Right.
It happens sometimes, occasionally, to some people, mostly people who work for PC Gamer. But other than that, it's like, if I'm on an airplane with my laptop, I'm not going to use it. I'm going to watch a movie or sleep or play a game
with my handheld systems.
If
you're on vacation somewhere for a week, you're going to have some downtime in the hotel. You might want to play a game.
I don't
know that we can start judging how games act in non-normal environments.
Well, what's normal? I mean, let's put it this way. Like, games are just as valid in this culture as television, as movies. I don't think it's reasonable to sit there, well, you're not going to sit there and play a game any more than you would sit there and take out your laptop and watch a movie. I think they're going to do the same thing.
But it's like judging GBA games harshly because you're somewhere where it's dark.
Well, I'm not trying to judge the game harshly. I'm saying that this is just another good reason not to go with an always online business model.
There's plenty of good reasons. Yeah. That's not even like top 10, though. Yeah. That's there, but in a litany of reasons why you should not do this. But they're moving this way, and the only way to push against it is to not buy this crap.
Yeah, which is also like bring up Cliffy B's thing from last week when he says, well, just don't buy EA games. Well, guess what? Still not going to buy EA games, Cliffy B. We're pretty good on that.
So I
like anytime someone says always online is a valid way to play games, just this is the most useful SimCity has been, is that you can just point to this and say it doesn't fucking work.
Yeah. So I don't think they made it very clear. I never saw it made very clear that it was, you know, you had to log in, things were run on servers, and yet I'm looking at this tweet right here where somebody asked the SimCity account, you know, when are you going to give us real answer regarding offline modes? And the SimCity account says, the game was designed for multiplayer. We sim the entire region on the server, so this is just not possible.
So at that point, are they saying, like, is it just, like, video feedback you're getting? Is it run, like, on live?
Or is this online?
The processes involved in the production of the city.
Like the simulation of where the poop goes.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Those are all held by the server.
Which is weird. That is insane.
It's clearly so intensive that the only thing you can possibly run is a bleed server. Never mind SimCity 2000, which is way more complex in every single possible way and also larger.
I think it's insane, and it's possibly an excuse for always online.
It's totally an excuse. It's something that EA forced them into when they talked about splitting it up.
Maxis is clearly excited about everything that they could do.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I want to blame EA completely. And I know you have the whole thing that EA is the enemy, but they're not the sole arbiter of all these things.
Yeah.
But okay, we'll take a break.
Yeah, let's take a break because Mark's become muddy. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Black Tiger, Mark's Game of the Year.
Yay.
1987 and maybe some other things. Yeah. We'll be back. Guess who's back?
Back again,
Backstreet.
Guess again.
We did the Backstreet's Back thing.
Yeah, we did that a while ago.
Yeah.
Cool. It just kind of happened again, unintentionally. Guess who's back? Guess who's back?
The turtles.
The
turtle rap? Can we do a turtle rap thing?
We can do a Black Tiger rap.
Like, I don't think we can do a Black Tiger rap. Because
what rhymes with Zenny?
Penny?
Penny?
Penny.
Man, what a cop-out when naming your money. All right, let's just take the... all right, how about Zollers? No, Zollers doesn't sound right. Coins, Zoins, Zennies. Zenies.
I'm sure that is a far different conversation in the native Japanese.
Zenny coins. Yeah.
There's one guy there that's like super pissed it wasn't Zickles.
Yeah.
Zickles. So we apologize in advance for Mark's audio quality. His apartment is directly underneath the EA SimCity server farm.
Then it should be working fine, because assuming he's stealing all the bandwidth.
Well, you would think, but the problem is it's all on a dial-up, so it's all kind of terrible.
That's just it. Mark is the cause of all the EA SimCity server problems. He's got a super, super microphone that just steals all the... Anyways... So the game that was decided upon for today's Illiterates Book Club was Black Tiger by Capcom, released in... Mark, help me out here.
Apparently it's released in 1987. It's weird because it feels like it should be way earlier than that.
Was I right about that?
Yeah, it was like release date August 1987.
Yeah. That seems late.
Yeah, that seems way late.
Well, all right then. I swear it was like 85.
What's that?
I'd swear it was 85, but I guess around 85 they were doing Ghouls and Ghosts and stuff.
Right. Well,
I think a good demarcation point between Capcom is like when they released a Final Fight, and like that was only 2 years until Final Fight. So that seems, I don't know. I always thought Black Tiger was like an early 80s game and not like a mid to late 80s game.
I'm looking at the poster for the arcade machine, and the tagline is "The more you play, more exciting it gets." Not the more exciting.
Not the more exciting, just. More exciting it
gets.
Well,
you see, it used to say "the more exciting it gets," and then the word "the" was crushed by a boulder.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
That's from out of nowhere. Yeah, because you couldn't tell. A boulder.
And it's like that. The idea of escalation was apparently a selling point in the 80s.
Well, speaking of escalation in this game, like, okay, so Black Tiger, I don't know if we want to go into the background of this, but you know, is part of the Capcom arcade cabinet. One of the first three packs. Games, and you can get it for like $5 basically. So it's basically, I don't know if how early into like the realm of like action RPGs Black Tiger is, or if it even is an action RPG, but it plays like a prototypical like arcade action RPG. It's like Knights of the Round if it was a platformer instead of a fighter. So it's what it feels like.
Well, the Mark's voice just keeps changing.
Yeah.
You play a barbarian hero, and what's sort of amazing is that you start the game with like the most powerful weapon ever.
Yeah,
you're firing like four daggers out of your whip, and you got like a ball on chain and a sword and laser. No, maybe not lasers, more like photon torpedoes that kind of explode out of you.
I think that's probably later, but it was weird because when I first started the game, because you know this is one of the arcade games. It's a classic arcade game, but it's one of those that kind of skipped because it's playing like Midway stuff at this point. Wasn't really into the whole Japanese like Capcom stuff at this point. So first starting off with this one, like he's just starting off daggers, and like, oh shoot, I'm going to run out of daggers. And it's like, no, you get unlimited like. Spread weapon in this game for some reason.
You're yes. A barbarian. You just carry daggers.
Yeah, you start off with unlimited spread weapon, and you think that's awesome for about five steps, and then you realize, oh shit, this is still going to eat quarters after giving me this ability to attack.
Well, the reason is because those fire guys are assholes, and they can shoot you from anywhere. They're always in like the most annoying position possible.
God, are those the ones that disappear?
No, those are the Grim Weepers.
Yeah. Oh no, that's right. Okay.
But the fire guards are kind of amazing. At least like they're not, like their range is kind of limited, so there's like a maximum point where you can just like, hey, jerk, throw your fire over here, and I'll go underneath it. But another thing the fire guys will do is appear out of pots that you break. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to get a key out of this pot. Oh no, it's a fire dude, and oh no, he keeps hitting me, and I'm dead.
I think that's where Resident Evil 4 got its snake in pots and boxes thing from. Because I remember in Resident Evil 4, like, you know, after the first time I broke a pot or a box or whatever and I got bit by a snake, every time I opened, you know, I smashed open a box or pot after that, I just attacked twice.
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Probably wasted, game, 4 hours of time total doing that.
Yeah. In this game, it really doesn't help you because, like, if you break a... Okay, so everything you do in this game to interact with something, you have to hit it. Like there's no this like use item button. You have to walk on top of it. So if like there's an enemy on the far side of you and there's two pots in the way, or you're standing on top of a pot, you have to kill that enemy.
And to do that, you're going to like throw your daggers through these pots. And you're going to break the pot. And inside the pot will be an asshole who will kill you as well.
Yeah. And what's even worse is that you're stuck once you start attacking. You can't turn around and attack the guys on the other side without stopping your attack.
A Capcom game with animation priority?
Oh. God help you, you gotta turn around in this game. Because like the skeletons, they are basically designed to keep you moving. Like if you stand in place where the skeletons are spawning for too long, you just can't keep up. And if like, something is behind you and in front of you in this game, as happens a lot with the skeletons, you're screwed. If something gets behind you, your best thing you do is just keep on marching forward until a boulder falls on top of your head. Because you're going to die anyway. You might as well see what's beyond this point.
Yeah. No, it occurs to me to some extent, you know, with the intro screen, with the story and stuff, that this game is basically 1987 Skyrim.
Or 1987, like, Dark Souls.
I was going to say it's 1987 Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
Because it kind of is.
Like, well, just keep going up these dungeons. Specifically with, like, the slaying dragons and the dragon bones around and stuff.
I am kind of fascinated by the concept of the Japanese take on like traditional Western fantasy stuff. Like anytime they try to do like Dungeons and Dragons.
And does this imply you don't think Dragon's Dogma has dragons?
Me?
Yeah.
No. It's just that I haven't played Dragon's Dogma, so my leap is of course to Skyrim. No, I mean, the game is called Dragon's Dogma.
Yes.
Does it have dogma?
It does.
Like the full version? Like that'd be pretty great. I'd buy that if like also.
Well, at one point. You know, there's that scene with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in the meeting room. And that's really all you want to see, and the rest of it, meh.
Yeah,
so I'm looking at the little story screen again, and I'm realizing that this game has a habit of forgetting the's. So it says, and other small words, like, long, long ago, three dragons descended from skies above with a rolling thunder and destroyed a kingdom into darkness.
Well, you know what it is? They were just optimizing it for Twitter back in 1987, just leaving some words out that you don't need, that you just like look past anyway. But the reason I wanted to play this anyway is because
why did you want us to play this game, Mark?
Because I hate you all. But also because this comes up in a book called Ready Player One. It was a book by Ernest Cline. Now, I wasn't entirely thrilled with this book because it there's some points where it seems it's trying too hard, but it does do its video game history pretty well. It's like it's obvious this guy has a love for video games. And the point in Ready Player One is you have these prototypical geeks who run around trying to get a treasure, and part of every treasure you have to beat a 3D version of a video game, like a virtual reality version of a video game. And in the first one, it was Joust. Like you had to play Joust against an actual wizard, and that's pretty good. Like Joust, unquestionably a classic video game experience. I don't think anybody could doubt that. And the second challenge was Zork. I don't think anybody could question that Zork was an amazing game. It's not my sort of game, but I can definitely see why we would put Zork in that same echelon.
How do you make a 3D Zork?
Yeah, it was a 3D like virtual reality Zork that you're inside of. So that was pretty great. But the third game, and the one to like unlock the final challenge, I guess. I might have this mixed up, but I'm pretty sure this one that unlocked the final challenge was a 3D version of Black Tiger. And like I said, Black Tiger is one of those games that I missed. I didn't really pay attention to like Japanese games until like Final Fight was released. So
like, are we talking like 2.5D or like first person?
No, it was first. I can't exactly remember how it was, but it seemed like it was like he was like stuck on like a platform, like you know the Mario 3D game, you know, where you're stuck walking forward, you can't do anything about it.
Okay.
So and like he had an accurate description of like having to go against one of those charging goblin guys with his shield and Black Tiger. And I was trying to think, why the heck was he so obsessed with Black Tiger? And I realized that had to been like his own personal thing. So I thought, well, this game with coming out with the arcade cabinet, I'm gonna go back and see exactly what was so great about this. And I could recognize like how like the classic like arcade game memes come in this guy, but I can't see how it was an arcade classic.
Yeah, I think this was just him because this is not a classic game in any way. Maybe he was just trying to get across the concept that it was really hard. Maybe it was really freaking hard.
Did they ever explain how you can turn these bearded men from stone to flesh again?
I'm going to assume it's the same way.
Well, I know how in the game.
Maybe you punch them.
Right, you break.
Cured.
That's true.
Maybe that. Maybe just like he like has the ability to like cure like the Hydra's disease. Oh, not the Hydra, but the Medusa's disease just by walking through. Maybe
something. One of my favorite things is the flashing neon exit signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also the fact that like after you save a bearded dude and then talk to him, all of a sudden you're like in this red draped item shop. I guess there's a fourth dimension.
They're wizards. You can't really explain it any other way. But one the other weird thing about these wizards is sometimes they'll give like coins or more time, and sometimes they'll just give you like really dumb advice. Like one time he's like, the skull guys can't be killed. Now this is after you already encountered one of the skull guys and realized beyond a shadow of a doubt the skull guys can't be killed. Why are you telling me this, you dickhead? And also, I had to get hit by a boulder 3 times to get to you. Can we talk about the boulders in this game?
I love when the boulder, like, it's very clearly going to make it all over you, and then it just drops.
Fucking asshole boulders.
The boulders are great because it's obvious it's there to punish, to take a quarter away from you. It's like, okay, this guy's gotten too far here. We should probably drop a boulder on top of his head just in case. Because there's no way it's there unless you memorize the boulder position.
I made it up to the 4th level, where you end up on the rooftop of some sort of castle. Mm-hmm. And then a boulder fell on me. On top of the rooftop of a castle, and I turned it off.
I equate that to the Spider-Man games swinging debacle of whether you have something above you to attach to or not. what's funny is that the boulder thing is just such a point that they make a note of it in the Wikipedia article about Black Tiger, that the Japanese version has a few changes that make it more challenging than its American counterpart. Several of the falling rock obstacles were added in this version.
I think that's one of the weird things about this culture. Apparently, I always get this backwards. Were the Japanese games like way more difficult than our versions, or is it backwards because of our... because we rented games. Because remember, like, we rented games apparently here constantly back in the 80s, so they had to make games stupidly difficult.
I remember renting consoles.
Yeah. Apparently this is one of the rare exceptions where, like, the Japanese version was, like, insanely difficult as compared to ours. I don't know what the hell these people were thinking. Like, maybe they just had too much money. Maybe it's a problem that Japan had just too much money in the 80s, and this is an example of the decadence of that era.
Every example I can think of is Japanese games being harder and being hard being a selling point. But, and mostly I'm thinking about that for Mario 2 and Zelda 2.
It's a good point, yeah.
Like, them being difficult was a selling point, and then Nintendo very quickly realized that that's a bad way to go.
I don't know. That's an interesting point about the differences in gaming cultures.
That's like the level progression in this game, because, you know, the first level is pretty easy, just showing you how to get through. It's still kind of a challenge, but, you know, you can get to the end of it pretty easily. And the second one is just stop holding your hand. There's more stuff to explore. And the third one is just hates you. It hates you and wants you to die with fire and cancer. It just wants to kill you.
And boulders.
And boulders on top of your head. And you know the third one's going to be a dickhead when it puts the merchant at the beginning of the level.
So you're saying is we need a modern-day Black Tiger reboot.
I think we had that in Dark Souls, because I really think that's what's going on.
That's fair. Yeah,
we need anything but a modern-day Black Tiger reboot.
There aren't nearly enough
falling... Dragon's Dogma is the modern-day Black Tiger.
Does that have any falling boulder obstacles?
I'm pretty sure it does, yes.
Oh, that's great.
Enemies set traps and occasionally boulders will come down.
Is Dragon's Dogma a Capcom game?
Yes.
It is. Huh.
Explains a lot. Mm. It's also still like $50, which is weird.
I have an idea. We should start a Kicktider.
Kicktider?
I don't know what the fuck that is. We should start a Kickstarter to make a documentary series about the running history of boulders in Capcom games.
Or just in video games in general, because then you get a whole bunch of like boulder dash too. And get that.
Or women in video games.
I think it's a little extreme for the.
Was that a little forced?
That's a little forced.
A little forced. All right. Well, do we have anything else to say about Black Tiger?
I got nothing.
Black Tiger is a very good lesson of things that should not be in video games anymore. Like the falling boulders, enemies that spawn from the ground as you walk over them, enemies who jump out of the background as you walk in front of them.
Yeah, that's great too. Also, treasure chests. Like,
I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been playing video games recently, like more recently. It's like, yeah, treasure chest, you go get that treasure chest. It's very rare that a treasure chest will attack you. And when it does, it's kind of hilarious. Like a mimic in Dark Souls, that's always great. In this game, like 90% of the treasure chests will kill you.
Yeah.
Fire will erupt out of them and kill
you. Oh, what's even worse is that you have no idea that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, you're just losing health, and you're like, wait, what happened? Oh, there's fire! I see fire now! It's like, You've got to at least make it clear that something is hurting you.
Yeah, I played this game for a few hours, and there's still parts about the treasure chest I don't understand, because in some treasure chests, there's, like, this weird, like, red glowy thing that comes out of it. I don't know what that does.
It's a burning ember.
It's a burning, I guess, and it doesn't do anything. I guess it gives you points. I don't know. Yeah.
Back when points mattered at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I would like to say one thing about the rest of the Capcom arcade cabinet on this thing. It's like, okay, so you pay $4 and you get Black Tiger, which isn't actually bad. But the other games on it are, well, actually, no, you do get 1942, and that's actually the start of the show. Like, pay $4, get 1942, and that's great. I don't understand why Capcom wanted to remind people that Avenger existed. Did you guys get the arcade cabinet, either one, anybody else?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Avenger is, imagine, like, a top-down shooter, but you could only shoot, like, 3 feet in front of you, because instead of, like, shooting things, you're punching. And that's what that game is about, and it's just the worst experience you've ever had in a video game that's not actually Black Tiger. It's enormously frustrating. I don't know. Surely there's more stuff in like their back catalog that they could have like filled that up with.
I guess the easy answer to that is that that's also a Z80 based game.
Yeah.
So they already had the emulator.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's also a CPS1 game, which is where all this stuff is coming from.
Hmm. But of course, they actually have like the rest of the games like from the collection already like hints for it. But like Street Fighter or Street Fighter 2 aren't on this thing, or Final Fight aren't on this thing. It's like actually like Black Tiger is the latest game on here. So it's actually 1987 backwards to 1983 or whatever.
That was not exactly the golden era of Capcom arcade games.
Well, they want you to buy Ghouls and Ghosts and then buy the crap that comes with it.
Yeah. And the problem with the Ghouls and Ghosts, because actually the next selection, now the first pack is the $4. The rest of them are $8. And the stuff that's in this next pack, the other three games, one of them is Gunsmoke, and that's an atrocity. I forget Section Z, which is kind of, it's an okay shooter, but it's kind of stiff. But basically at the end of the day, you're paying like $8 to play Ghouls and Ghosts. And you're playing it, and you're quickly realizing this isn't Super Ghouls and Ghosts. And Super Ghouls and Ghosts is actually the one I had fun memories of, not this bastard arcade thing that hates me.
I don't understand why they don't just take the PSP game and put it on XBLA.
Yeah.
That makes way too much sense, and for some reason Capcom just doesn't do it.
I do appreciate that Capcom realizes that they have this enormous back catalog of arcade games and actually does justice to it by trying to remind people that it existed. That's something that's, it's weird that Namco or Midway isn't doing the same thing. I think if you had rights to do this stuff, and number one, it's tiny to begin with, so it's not like these games are taking like a huge amount of bandwidth. Everything you have access to like this should be out on everything. I can understand like some of it is like licensed, like Aliens vs. Predator, you're probably not going to get hold of that. But everything else should be out there because it's not making you money otherwise, and people need to know about this. These are culturally important. So,
all right, moving on.
Black Tiger, I apologize, and we'll figure out what we're playing next time.
Yeah, we probably should have done that before we started.
Probably, yes.
We say that each week, or each time we bring this up, and it's like, oh well.
Oh, it's all good. Awkward silence.
I don't think there's much to say about it other than pointing people to.
So, Brian, what have you been playing?
Oh, what have I been playing? I played Deadlight. I played and I finished Deadlight.
How was it?
Good.
Remind me what Deadlight is again, because I barely have a memory of this.
It's a side-scrolling kind of, you know, 2.5D, so it's 3D, but you're running on a 2D plane.
Okay.
And you play this kind of, you know, grizzled guy going through a zombie apocalypse.
Grizzled.
Yeah, he's quite grizzled. He wears like a beanie and stuff like that. He's got a beard.
I keep getting this one mixed up with, I think it's I Am Alive, or what was that XBLA game that came out where you like had one bullet at a time?
You know, yeah,
three... I Am Alive.
I Am Alive. Yeah. I keep getting that those two mixed up for some reason. Anyway.
No, but so, I mean, I kind of knew I wanted to play it. The game visually was pretty interesting. There's a lot of kind of stuff they did with, like, you know, the silhouettes and, you know, jumping and running around and zombies. So anyways, I kind of knew I wanted to play it, but I didn't quite know what I was getting in for. The story is kind of, you know, maybe a little hokey. The voice acting isn't that great. But, you know, it's solid. It's there. But the actual gameplay of putting you in the point of kind of this zombie apocalypse plays out really well. Like combat versus zombies, you actually do kind of want to avoid them. Cause if you've, you know, even with a gun or, you know, you kind of get an axe as the melee weapon you get in the game, it's pretty hard. It really made you feel like, oh, fuck zombies. So it did a really great job of kind of making you think on your feet and kind of provide a challenge as far as kind of combating these zombies. And the platforming was actually really good. Like, I kind of want to go back just to speed run through the levels because the platforming was actually pretty fluid. Almost Mirror's Edge-ish. If you ever played the Mirror's Edge iOS game, anyone?
No. Is that Catapult? Well, that sounds like Catapult. Is it Catapult? Catapult?
No. I mean the actual Mirror's Edge iOS game.
Oh, wait. Yeah, the 2D side-scroller?
Yeah. I don't know if it's that fluid or fast, but it felt good and lends itself well to speedrunning. So I played Deadlight, beat that. I recommend it. I don't know how much it is on Steam right now. I got it as part of that Amazon pack. A couple months ago or something. But
was it one of the Humble Bundles or?
No. It was just a straight up pack on Amazon. So it's $15 on Steam right now, which is I'd say probably about the price point, and I'd say it's worth playing. That's pretty much it. I've been playing that. I've been playing Knights of Pen and Paper on my iPhone. I finally got a new iPhone, upgraded from my Shitty 3G. But other
than that, you have a 5 now?
Yep, I got a 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, what, are you jealous?
Yes, kind of.
It's pretty nice to have a phone that actually works. But no, I haven't been playing much else past that. Runner 2, which we talked about a bit last week. But Deadlight was my main thing.
So I've been playing Tomb Raider.
Tell us about Tomb Raider.
It is the combination of Uncharted 2, Beyond Good and Evil, and Tomb Raider?
How is it like Beyond Good and Evil?
You're given hubs that you're meant to explore and collect stuff around. And
okay.
The problem with this game is that it's like, as if that analogy didn't help, it was super schizophrenic. Like, there's a bunch of good parts of this game that don't fit well together.
Okay.
Like, people have talked about how they try to present this narrative of Lara being a... someone who was pushed into killing, and then, you know, she's not like this huge hardcore Nathan Drake style mass murderer.
Who, but then, I would like to point out yet again, his first thing in Uncharted 2 was, "I don't want to kill people."
Yeah, then you kill a bunch of people.
Kill everybody.
That's sort of the thing here. Like, she doesn't want to kill people, and it only shows that half the time, and the other time she's straight up murdering a bunch of people.
Now, is it like she getting in situations where like she could clearly avoid killing people, or is she like just creating situations like where she's obviously trying to murder people and just justifying this after the fact?
I mean, everything's like you have to get through to, you have to get past these people to get to the next area.
She couldn't just like, I don't know, wait a couple hours, wait for it to clear out, or like.
Well, it's like any other video game. If it wasn't on a rail, you could just avoid these people.
Well, I mean, they generally do a pretty decent job of giving you urgency to get to wherever you need to go. And, it does pretty decent things with this, with evolving her character into someone that actually... she understands that she's killed a whole bunch of people.
Right.
Like, there's one scene where you have to rescue your other shipmates, and they're held up in this broken part of a plane in a cage... and they're guarded by 5 or 6 guys. So you kill all the guys, and after you kill them all,
everyone in the cage goes, "Oh, Laura, that's so badass. You're so amazing." And she has this 1,000-yard stare. She looks tired. She looks dirty. And she's just like, "Yeah, whatever. Let's just hurry up and get you out."
That's kind of great.
Yeah, they don't call attention to it. And I love when video games don't call attention to a point,
right?
Because they all call attention to points.
Right, because that's the one thing video game writers are just crap at is subtlety.
Yeah, but keep in mind, this is part of an area where it's a temple on a gas leak of, like, incendiary gas, and literally the entire level is just explosions, constant explosions. So subtlety, my name is not necessarily Tomb Raider.
I would question why the bad guys decide to put their base there. I would say put it somewhere where there's not explosions. That's just
they do a decent job of, like, explaining why these bad guys are crazy people. Because the island that they're on is protected by storms, so nobody who goes there can ever leave.
Okay.
So they think that by taking the sacrifice of a girl who is a descendant of the Empress who used to be on the island will let them actually get through the storms. And as Laura, you're trying to save your friend. So they do a decent job, but the problem is the narrative itself is so schizophrenic that half the time you're supposed to believe Laura is this damsel in distress, and half the time you're supposed to believe he's an incredible badass. And the only time the game really, really made me cringe is you shoot a guy in the head with an arrow in a cutscene.
Oh, wow.
And then there's like 30 other guys there. So you're not usually you'd be able to take him out because, hey, I have an assault rifle, but it's a cutscene. So two guys grab Laura and another one says, "That was my brother," and punches her in the face twice. And that, like, wow, that might have been a little far game. And it's funny because that bothered me, but, like, literally the scene after, she jumps into a river of blood.
River
blood. That didn't bother
me
so much.
Where did they get a river of blood?
They've been sacrificing a whole bunch of people.
That's not...
She congratulates the...
Yeah, that is a lot of blood.
And, like, it doesn't even, like, stick. It just... It looks like red water, essentially. And eventually she cleans off, just... dungeoning through.
And of course, like, her white shirt is not, like, horribly, like, tinged blood red at the end of that.
Nope.
Great.
It, like I said, there's a huge amount of dissonance in this game. And for the most part, I can understand the things they wanted to do, but they should have stayed consistent with it.
Let me ask you something. I assume you played, like, at least other, not every other Tomb Raider, but other games in the Tomb Raider series.
Yeah.
Does this Laura feel like the other Lauras, or is this just feel like a completely different girl who doesn't have any history with the rest of the characters?
The problem is that the Laura they have in previous Tomb Raider games is already, like, I was going to say cocksure, but I don't think that's a good... Right. Already so experienced and established by that point that she is, it's like watching young Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Like, you don't expect him to act like adult Indiana Jones because adult Indiana Jones has seen some shit.
Right.
And the game is getting to that point where it's actually like I said before, that reaction she had to killing a whole bunch of people, that I can see how she's turning into that other Laura because she is essentially a mass murderer. And she understands that idea, and that is a decently compelling thing. The one problem is that all the other characters in the game are so stupidly one-note and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the ethically dubious archaeologist who doesn't believe anything Laura says. And there's the Native American that speaks in mantras.
Great.
And calls Laura a little bird. Then there's, like, the no-nonsense black woman.
You know, I'd really like to hear what Native Americans think about modern video games, because I can't think of aside from, like, Prey, and that's a big maybe, I can't think of one positive, like, depiction of a Native American in a video game. Usually they wind up as, like, these weird noble, like, shamans, or, like, this weird bullshit, like you just said before, where, like, the dude was talking in like, mantra and, like, shit.
Well, they really liked Assassin's Creed 3, because, I mean, Ubisoft pulled in a bunch of Native American groups to help write that.
Yeah, and the characters had more to them than just stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, they were actual people who lived in a place and did stuff. I know, it's weird. It's easy to point out characters that are not necessarily intended as negative depictions of Native Americans, but still fail miserably, like T-Hawk from Street Fighter. Like, he's not meant to be a bad guy, but he's an awful, awful example.
Or the what's the character's name in Killer Instinct that was basically T-Hawk?
I think it was Mohawk.
Yeah, it was actually Mohawk. Yeah.
No, it was Thunderhawk. So he was T-Hawk.
No, I thought he was Killer Instinct.
Yeah, he was abbreviated T-Hawk often. I think his name was Thunderhawk.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's impressive. Anyway, let's find out.
Because we talk internet. About
Killer Instinct, the better.
Oh man.
So, like, in terms of gameplay, Tomb Raider is actually really surprisingly good.
Really?
Like, I would say this game is the best Uncharted game since Uncharted 2.
I was wrong. His name is Chief Thunder, which is so much worse.
Like, I've literally watched, like, old school, like National Wrestling Alliance, like, wrestling shows have more positive depictions of Native Americans than that. And that was Chief Wahoo McDaniel, and his main attack was the actual Indian Chop.
Yeah.
That's the best name ever. I actually laugh every time. Chief Wahoo McDaniel.
Chief Wahoo McDaniel. I think he's actually Indian. That's the weird part. But you say, now, the thing that always comes about the Uncharteds is, like, I actually like the traversal in Uncharted 2. I know people would like deride it because they feel like it basically destroyed, like, any feeling of exploration because it's linear. I actually kind of liked it. How is the exploration in this one compared to Uncharted 2?
I mean, it's Uncharted. It doesn't do set pieces as well.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of Laura's getting on a bridge, and hey, the bridge is collapsing. Like, there was one scenario where there was, like, six of those in a row. But a lot of it, like...
This just isn't Laura's day.
Yeah. Like, the exploding temple was sort of cool once you realize how stupid it was.
Right.
And there's a couple of other... Like, there was one where you're inside the boat that crashed, and you're exploring it, and you have to escape while it's exploding, essentially. There's a lot of explosions. So, yeah, it's... Spectacle doesn't do nearly as well as Uncharted 2, but I'd say it brings together enough things, even if it doesn't fit them well together, to be better than Uncharted 3.
So if you were to, like, if you viewed it in a vacuum, Uncharted 2 never existed. Now, I realize if Uncharted 2 didn't exist, like, 80% of games coming out right now would not also exist. But in a vacuum where Uncharted 2 doesn't exist and this game does exist, do you think people would regard it as highly, or at least...
Yeah, I think people would fucking love this game.
Okay.
The problem is that, like, they did the worst fucking job I've ever seen any developers do of pre-hype marketing. Yeah. Like the quote-unquote rape scene?
Yeah.
A guy puts his hand on her hip, which is skeezy, don't get me wrong. Right. It's super fucking skeezy.
That's pretty skeezy. But
she immediately kicks him in the balls and then kills him later.
That's kind of empowering. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that dude, like, tries to molest her and, like, she murders him. That's good. Yeah. I think that's a good lesson to teach young girls.
They do a pretty decent job of, like, showing why these people... Like I said, they show why they're crazy. Right. And that they're shipped around the island, they haven't seen anyone.
Right.
And if you're going to hold that against this game, then you need to hold the weird scene where Tajima in Yakuza 4 is, like, he just got out of prison for 10 years. And he's, like, he sees a 13-year-old girl, and he has this moment of, like, oh, fuck, can't... No, bad. And... That, I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable reaction for someone who's been in prison for 10 years.
I'll take your word for it. That seems like skeezy to me, but still.
It's skeezy because he's a Yakuza.
I understand, yeah. It's, how about the death? The other thing that really worried about this game, is aside from the weird, like, I don't want to say misogynistic, like, marketing, but weird, like, we're going to put this girl in distress and you're going to feel for her. The death scene, specifically the one where, like, she, like, has this, the tree limb stuck in her face. Does it, like, get worse than that?
It doesn't get worse than that, but 90% of the deaths are just going to be you got shot and you just fall to the ground. But those 10% of deaths are like, whoa, guys. Pull it back a little.
Why do they exist? I mean, are they just like cutscenes if you fail a cutscene or what?
They thought they were making a mature storyline.
Yeah.
And that's what you do when you ratchet it up, I guess. And I think they thought they were making Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay.
And ultimately, when the game is at its best, it's, you know, this high-paced, high-fast action sort of thing. When it's at its worst, it's when it's trying to do stuff like that.
Right.
It's trying to establish a narrative that they could have done much more simply and with far fewer, you know, amount of bullshit, essentially.
Yeah, again, it's easy for us to say this, like, as guys playing a video game where, like, you're controlling this girl. I would like to I like an actual lady's opinion who's played this on it, how they feel toward Laura's depiction in this, if they think it's weird or, like, what.
I think the growth she has in the game is actually pretty great.
Yeah.
Like
character development, you mean?
Yeah, they put that in pretty well. She goes from, you know, naive and scared to sort of sullen and, I don't want to say broken, but she realizes what's happening, right, to she needs to be the one to step it up because nobody else is. Like, there's a decent scene where somebody, she could not save somebody, so they die.
Mm-hmm.
And then she walks away saying, I'm not going to let anyone else die. And I think that's kind of funny because I immediately shot someone in the head with an arrow and right, she said that.
Yeah, video games always get that wrong when they try to make like the weight of one person's death mean something. They right, invariably fail at that.
But it was actually pretty nice because as I'm looking for this guy, and eventually you find him pinned under some rubble, but as I'm looking for him, I find a bunch of journal entries he's made like, oh, I'm doing this, I'm trying to do this so Laura doesn't have to, because I'm trying to get her to notice me, or there's really weird shit going on in this island, I don't like it, but somebody has to step up, so might as well be me. And then you find him and you realize him stepping up cost him his life. So she takes on all that responsibility, and I think it's kind of nice. It's a refreshing change from Drake, who made a joke about everything.
Right.
So
it's hard to have any impact with anything Drake did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, how long was the game, do you remember?
I'm not done yet, but I feel like I'm in the last 50%. I'm in the last 70%, I'd say. Okay. Or last 30%, rather. And I've played for about, I was going to say, 7 hours.
Okay. Is there any exploration at all? Like, is there anything that you would, like, come back to play?
Aside from collectibles, not really. There's, like, tombs mm-hmm. that you can go look for, but the game literally, there's a bell that rings that says, tomb nearby.
Wow.
And you can go, and generally, like, even that's not hard to find because then there's, like, little white paintings everywhere that will show you, hey, maybe you should come check out this thing. And these tombs themselves are like one puzzle. So exploration, not so much. It's very rarely. But on the other hand, I don't think I explored that much in old Tomb Raider games. Like maybe Tomb Raider 1 and 2, but like Underworld essentially was move forward.
Okay.
So I think they've been moving that direction for a while. Legends was too, now that I think about it. Yeah, so people who tell me, like, hey, I played Tomb Raider games for exploration, I'm like, you played Tomb Raider games in 1996.
Right, you played the first three on the PlayStation 1, maybe.
Yeah, and then you skipped Angel of Darkness because you're smarter than I am. Angel of Darkness was, like, it still had tank controls, but you couldn't use the D-pad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and also there was another male character that for some reason was there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm done with that game. Also, I've been playing Trackmania. Has anyone else been in that beta, Brian?
No, I have not.
You should download it. The beta is actually pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh no, no. I love Trackmania. I just have to be in the right mood for it.
That mood for me is when I want to listen to dubstep because that's what's on every server.
Yeah. Oh god, do they allow for like custom sounds on servers?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Join the Giant Bomb server because that's what I've been on, and it like there was one thing where they were playing X-Files dubstep for 20 minutes.
Nice. That's awesome. I'll have to do that.
All right. Anyone else got anything to talk about before we wrap?
I've been playing Metal Gear Solid Rising like on hard mode. It's weird because now that I've like pumped up the Muramusa, it's actually kind of like way easier than the normal mode. So that's all I've been doing.
Murasama, actually. Yes,
whatever. Colossal.
Because Sam misspelled it.
Ah. Fascinating.
But yeah, the leap from hard to very hard and revengeance on that game is insane. Like, I went from S-ranking Ray to getting killed by him repeatedly.
Were we about to say, Matt, before you interrupt?
I've been playing Forza Horizon, and that is a really damn good Need for Speed game, but it is not a Forza game.
Yeah, that's the same. Is this the first time you played Forza Horizon?
No, I tried the demo before, okay. So I kind of knew what I was going into. It had a price drop this week.
It is in a weird space because you're right. That's not Forza. It's not quite as arcadey as Need for Speed, but it is more. I liked it better than the last Need for Speed I played. Let's put it that way.
It's in a very weird space because I'm not surprised that they decided to copy Need for Speed because they want to kind of edge in on that market.
Right.
I'm very surprised they decided to copy Need for Speed Pro Street. Because that was not exactly a landmark Need for Speed game.
Didn't play Pro Street. Was it? It wasn't also open world though, was it?
it was not open world, but it was the same sort of mixed street legalized racing where you go to an event where you were. It's the same sort of festival mentality. Although I'll say this in Pro Street's favor, there are multiple festivals in different locations.
All right, so we got it.
Yep.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap.
All right.
We'll notify everyone of the next IBC game whenever we decide what that is.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you guys later.
See ya.
Bye.